Hey everyone, and thank you for coming. I'm pleasantly surprised. I expected after last night's activities that a lot of people wouldn't be able to make the 8 o'clock. But it's nice to see everybody here, and hopefully you stay awake during the entire session. If not, you can get a repeat tomorrow at 8:30, again early, unfortunately, but it'll allow you to get more info. So I'm Brian Ricks. Many of you may know me from the Jumpstarts that I co-hosted with Rui Maximo and Aaron Steele. So let's get going. So this morning we're going to be talking about the link client process, login process. Now it is much easier to see and to extrapolate what's going on in the physical link client. There's a lot more tools accessible that are easier for us to see from the link process, but we'll also slightly touch on the mobility and see some logins and some troubleshooting tips and how that goes. In that process. Now, the process itself is basically two parts, right? We're going to have discovery, and then we're going to have the actual authentication process that happens. So discovery's changed a lot over the past years. Partially in Link 2010 with the CU, Link Discover was introduced. Prior to that, and since the LCS days, LCS, OCS, SRV records, and DNS is how things worked. That means different clients are going to act differently based off their versioning because they're going to do things differently. And so we're not always looking to the same process or tools or locations based off the tool that, or the client that's actually doing the login process, right? So we look at Link 2010 being the fat client Link 2010. It uses DNS to do things to look up. So one of our key troubleshooting steps when we're looking at the login process is potentially identifying what works, what doesn't work, and that can identify, oh, then there's something is broken in X or Y. So in this process, again, Link's going to be using the SRV. It could very well work just fine, and then internally, the mobile client or the Windows Modern client may not log in correctly because they're only looking to Link Discover. We'll also notice things like the Phone Edition, which is not being upgraded anytime soon from the Link perspective. It is only SRV. And so it's not like we can get rid of the SRV lookup. It's not like we can change the way the DNS works. The process and what happens is different, and where the errors occur are different based off of the process that's logging in, whether it be the SRV lookup or whether it be the Link Discover. So when we're looking at that, we're saying, well, what is this, for those who don't know, what is this Link Discover versus the DNS SRV, and why was there a change? What is the actual difference between the two processes? And what's the advantage or disadvantages? And you can argue that there's advantages and disadvantages to both configuration types. So with DNS and SRV, one, DNS is everywhere, it's simple. SRV was a problem in and of itself when we first started down the road where there were some external DNS providers that didn't support basically older bind versions of DNS that didn't support SRV. We had to deal with that. That went away. And that was no longer much of an issue, but then we got into just being able to understand where we were going and what we were doing. But with DNS, we have costs, we have values. We can assign multiple records to the same process, and much like an MX record, give it accordance to where if it goes in and doesn't get to number one, higher cost, we go to number two, things of that nature. So inherently, a type of high availability can be defined, and an alternate process can be defined using SRV records. When DNS returns that result, we're getting back the server name and the physical port it's on. And that's why we have a split DNS model, because potentially, and more than likely, internally we want to get a result back differently than when we're outside the network. If nothing else, we want a different port. We want to be on 5061 internally. We want our clients to end up on 443 when we're on the outside. So SRV records pointed us to that port and to the DNS name. Now, an extra DNS query gets done for the A record. We have to figure out what's telling us it's this server and it's this port, but can we get there? That kind of thing. But that's how it works. And it's supported on all legacy. Again, this goes back to the LCS days, the SRV concept. Should add that everything we're talking about is automatic, right? We could potentially hard code things into the link client and bypass all of the discovery process, but the idea is discovery is giving us an extra added value. And when we get to Link Discover, now it's something that allows us to actually get back our actual hosts and not just a dumb record. So I may have multiple pools, multiple edge deployments, and based off what I get back in my Link Discover results or my auto discover, I'm going to go based off where I'm actually physically at. We'll also see where it actually prevents denial of service type attacks on our internal servers, because they never get there. If Link Discover says you're not valid, we stop the process, and we'll see that as well. It's obviously required for modern and mobility. It's just how they're being built. You can bet further state and going forward, if that's where we're going. Link Discover is the auto discover of, well, and we actually use it to get to auto discover, of the Link world, much akin to the exchange process. So a high requirement. And then there's certificate trust issues that may or may not happen. Mobility, depending on the mobile client, may or may not have issues with not trusting the certificate, and we'll see a little bit of that later on. The fat client will definitely not work if, in fact, it doesn't trust things, because it just doesn't work that way once we get to the pool. Okay? So that's the difference between Link Discover and DNS. They're both used in a typical deployment. There's no reason you wouldn't have the DNS SRV, and if you want to support any modern clients, Link Discover is what we're going to want. So what clients and how they do what they do? So again, we're going to look at the Link 2013 client. So, and technically in 2010 as well, so our friends, but from the SRV perspective. Now, the Link Discover is the process from a client login. All right, so we're looking at when a Link 2013 client logs in, what preferential order do we go in when we're looking for how we're going to get and discover our network? So first we're going to do is check for an internal record, which means we're looking for linkdiscover dot whatever your SIP URI namespace is, right? So if I am Bob at Contoso.com, I'm looking for linkdiscover.contoso.com A record, internal. Does that exist? Yay. Okay, we're on the internal network. I can get my discovery. I start my process. Things go. If that fails and doesn't exist, or we have a cert failure, again, this is arguably questionable based off of the versioning and the exact mobile client that you have, because it works and then it doesn't work depending on what version you're on. But ideally, if internal fails because of a certificate check, we then go do a Link Discover check. We don't stop there. It's not a hard stop. We want to say, okay, so we can't get to Link Discover internal. We get a record, but I don't have rights to get to it, or I don't understand it. Therefore, I'm going to go check for the external record. And then if that fails, then the Link Discover process ends. For SRV and DNS, we go through a long order. Now, a lot of these, you only need one to work, right, in any of these processes. But we only need one to work. And while it's definitely a historic thing to have your internal records and your SIP external records, the advantage of having them is simply your logs are cleaner on your client. Beyond that, there's no advantage. But because they're going to query for it, they're just not going to get an answer, and they're going to move on in the process. So we're going to look for an SRV record for SIP internal, TLS. We don't find that, then we look for SIP TLS. And the majority of us, that's where we're going to stop. It could be the inside record, could be the outside record, but that's where from a DNS SRV, where the client should find an answer. If it doesn't find that, we kind of go into this process of, well, let's try a backdoor method. Let's see if they have SIP internal as an A record, dot whatever their domain is. And I'll just see if it's there. I'm not saying it should be, but if it is, it'll give me an answer to where I'm supposed to go. Same with SIP. So if on the outside our edge server name is sip.contoso.com, then voila, we have a kind of a backup process that it can actually fail to and find, because it's just the name of what we'd be looking for anyway. It's just the default, let's look for SIP. And then we look for SIP external. Once all of that's done, web queries happen too, and the web queries kind of tell us where we're going, what's going on, and we'll look at a process to actually look at those web queries and see where we're going. So that'll be awesome. So let's look at some captures now and kind of see how things are working. So a couple things that we want to point out on a capture, and this is a Wireshark capture. This is nothing fancy. Highly important to know that there are a lot of tools that do a lot of things all the same. It's up to whatever is comfortable for you to get these captures. That's what you want to do, right? So if you've got your own personal tool or process, if you're having to do some syslog off a backend switch that's capturing information, or a firewall, or whatever, I mean, we really don't care as long as you can find these processes. What I use with Wireshark, and that's what we'll go through on the demo, assuming that the demo gods are with us today and everything works. But we wanted to see a couple of things that are important here. First, this is an internal failure because there is no DNS found. And you'll notice where we're going through the process of looking for various items. We're starting with Link Discover. Is it there? All right, we're going to look to the outside. We look to the inside. Is anything around? Do we know where we're going? We do another Link Discover query, again, based off where we're looking to physically go. And then finally, we start to go through those A record checks. Okay, let's see about SIP, SIP internal, SIP again, SIP external. Let's just start searching for stuff. And in the event that we do not find anything, we get the sign-in process saying, is DNS working? Are things working the way you expect them to work? On the right is an interesting pop-up that you sometimes may see and may wonder why. The most common reason is DHCP is used as an internal process to the client as well. So when we get DHCP settings for whatever client it is that we're using, we're getting pushed down our DHCP settings that we've set specifically and typically for the Windows phone so it can log in, know where to go. Well, the Link client can use those just as well as the desktop phone. So when we get it, we're going to say, hey, is this where I'm supposed to go? Because this doesn't match. So for instance, I'm on Microsoft's campus. I'm logging in with my own domain. When I go to log in, it's going to say, are you Microsoft? And you'll say, nope, try another server. Then it goes through the discovery process. So if you get this pop-up, you'll notice if you're tracing this, the actual discovery won't start happening for your domain until you tell it, try another, go into another process. Don't use the information you got from DHCP to bring this back. It's also important to know that this process is, and we'll see, only happens, not only happens, but the whole process only happens when it's a brand new login. In the event we log in successfully, the Link client caches that information. We know where you're going now. We don't need to go do the whole discovery process over. We're very efficient in that manner, sometimes to our detriment, but it allows us to know where we're going and just kind of skip this process. And we'll see when somebody logs in, we start this process. And here, we're seeing Link Discover is found. And when Link Discover is found internally, it returns an A record for the pool name, and then all of a sudden we're going to Autodiscover, and Exchange kicks in to start doing its process lookups, because the Link clients aren't going to want to log in and authenticate with Exchange as well. So we continue that process. But as soon as he gets a result back, we're good. On subsequent logins, which is the second one, so now we've logged out, logged physically back in, we go right to the server. We know where to go. We don't need to go do this query. We're all happy-go-lucky. So when we're troubleshooting, it very well may be necessary for us to kind of delete the old information to make sure we start this query process over. And sometimes that fixes everything, especially true on the Link phone editions where they've cached information and then you decide you're going to change VLANs or you're going to change pools and that phone's like, I don't know where to go. Doing a hard reset on the phone or a soft reset of the hard reset of the phone to erase that information causes the query to happen again and causes it to look to DNS or to everything. So, and again, I mean, Link Discover is DNS. Don't get me wrong. We are doing a Link Discover query. It's just different because it's a web service call, right? So when we don't get a Link Discover answer, it's not there. We've decided we don't want to support mobility. We don't want to support the modern client. We don't want to support a better login process. Well, hey, then we're going to stay only SRV when we're using a Link 2013 client. When that happens, you'll notice that we go through the process, just like we saw from the list of preferentials. Link Discover internals aren't there. Link Discovers aren't there. SIP internal TS. Oh, but TLS is there, and voila. We get the response of no, it's SIP. Now, SIP, the name it returns, as long as it's a valid name in the certificate, is valid. Right? It doesn't necessarily have to be the pool name. Typically, when I'm deploying, that's how I do internal domains, because I like it to be SIP inside and SIP outside. Again, it's a catch to make sure we find it, because we can find SIP. And if I change pools, it's agnostic. It's not tied to a pool name. I can point those SIP records to any pool that I want to point to. However, once we go on to the next process, right, once we go on to subsequent, there's one more query that happens because just like in the top where we find its SIP and then go to the actual pool, in subsequent logins, we still go back to that SIP name because we don't know if that's going to be, it's not necessarily a pool, but that's where we've been told to go via the SRV records. We cache that, and then we do the query to say to turn that A record into whatever it's resolving to, the actual pool name, which in this case is BC Labs 2013 Link, right? So that is highly important from a logging in process when we're troubleshooting, again, knowing that you're not necessarily going to get the information if you've already logged in at least once or failed even once. We can get into this mode of things aren't working. We'll need to clear things out. And we'll see how to do that and what we're doing when I say that here in a second. So hopefully. Once we get to this process, the next part of discovery happens is the web service query. Now, here we're using Fiddler to pull back stuff. And all of you that are not familiar with Fiddler, it's a tool that we can interject a certificate that's our own private certificate into all of the call flow on that particular box. It could be deemed a security problem. It could not, depending on where you're coming from. But it allows it to encrypt and decrypt the SSL communication, so we can actually see what's going on, which is highly important if we're trying to troubleshoot what's going on. It's also important, we can pull back this information, and in the bottom, when we're starting to look at what is being returned, it's not uncommon that when we're troubleshooting, and if it's a brand new install, it doesn't work, I can see the typo, I can see what's being pushed back to me, I can see that it's not quite right, and that's going to happen. So as we're coming down, we're looking and showing here that the link discover internal is queried. The auto-discover response comes back with some information. And then once we do the auto-discover query, all of a sudden we get back all our pretty information of where you're supposed to go, what you're supposed to do, how the process actually works. So when we're looking up at how our physical clients are getting in, if we're internal, if we're external, how things go. Also interesting to know that the MCX are listed internal, external, as are the UCWA. More important, as we get to mobility, external is the only thing that we look at. Yeah, it's there. We tell you that internally it would be go ahead and go to the pool name, UCWA, but we'll never go there. If it's a Microsoft-created mobile client, we only talk to the external name, which is why we have that hairpinning problem that we have to deal with mobility and where all that comes into play. Okay? So that's auto-discover and our actual results that are happening. So we're going to get into showing how we actually did this, hopefully. Any questions that come up? Okay. At the end, we're going to have another Q&A, so if you have and want to save questions for the end, that's awesome. We do have 5 Skype $10 cards to give away to those that ask questions, if anybody asks any. If you don't, then they won't be given away. So here we have a couple things that we want to show. So this is just a normal Link 2013 world, nothing special about it. There is a client that exists, and he actually already has Wireshark up. If I can find my mouse, there we are. And he is able to log into this prime. So we know the environment's working. What we're going to do is we're going to actually break the environment. Right? We actually want to make it so it doesn't work so we can show how we figure out to make it work. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and log him out. Now, because he's logged in, he's got a cache directory. Now, the cache directory is slightly different based off what versioning you're looking at. We're looking at 2013, so we'll go from there. It has to be completely closed in order to delete this directory. How I personally get here, which is in your long personal path of your user, app data, blah, 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 is I do a %10%, and then go up one level. And that's where Microsoft's at. Then you go to Microsoft Office, blah, 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 right? Once I'm here, I can see here's my user that logged in, and I can see all of my cached information and how things know who he is. Now, the downside of deleting this folder, there is none other than you've downloaded the address book, and that's internal to your company. You've just deleted your address book. It'll have to be re-downloaded scratch, right? It's not going to be a delta. It'll be a full download. Also, any custom locations that you've entered into your profile, this is where they're stored. So you delete this, those are gone too. Ideally, this is a problem, so it doesn't really matter that we're going to delete anything. We want to fix it, so we're going to delete this process. Now, some of our most basic tools that we have when we're doing discovery process is simply DOS, and using the command prompt to do. Oh, I don't want admin because that's going to be too difficult in my world. Oh, I take it back. I do because I need to flush it. Is ipconfig. Let's look at what we're getting back from a DNS perspective. We can do that prior to doing any Wireshark traces. We can just see what am I querying, and does it actually get a result, and is that result what I'm expecting to get back? So, administrator. Okay. So in this instance, if I did an ipconfig display DNS, that's going to show me my local cache of what I know and what I've searched on before in the past, right? So I know my domain controller, which makes sense, and that's pushed back. I also have here the Exchange server. It's already cleared its cache of what was on the link, but we're going to flush it anyway to make sure there's no information in here. Flush DNS. And when we do an ipconfig and display, we now have no cache. So we can start with the process of deleting our folder, clearing our cache. A reboot obviously would do this as well. Reboots take too long, so especially in demo environments. So this allows us to get to a state of unknown. Now, if I did have a query and I was troubleshooting, it is DNS, it is Windows, if I didn't get the answer, I'd want to flush. Otherwise, my cache says it doesn't exist. I'm not going to go look again until that expires, that lookup expires, right? So if I'm looking in here, I can see that I have SIP, and I want to not have SIP because I can find SIP. I also have in here Link Discover Internal. We don't want that to work, so we'll delete that as well. And then I can also look and see that I have no TCP, only my TLS record. Okay, and then because DNS has his nice cache queries himself, we're going to flush his cache. So he's got no answers, he has no way to tell us what's what. So, from a Link client perspective, There is no way for me to get the information now unless I had host records or something of that nature. That's a really key point, too. When I flush this, and I always display right after I flush to make sure there's nothing there, if there's already records there, more than likely they're in your host file, and that can be throwing things off, too, especially when you're troubleshooting and you're testing things and somebody else is testing and you forget stuff, and it gets, yeah. So one easy way to check is simply by flushing it and then doing an immediate display. It's going to show you what is in cache, and host file records are immediately in cache. Okay. So now, if all goes well, or not well as the case may be, if I can find my mouse, there it is, when we load and launch the Link client, we should not be able to get there because we can't get in. There's no way to find out. Discovery is what's failing at this point. And there we go. It's not that authentication is broken. It's not that Link's not up. I just don't know how to get there. Now again, I could put into the client, and one of the great troubleshooting to see is a discovery process problem. Just hard code the server name in there. If that works, okay, we've got other problems. It could be certificate-based, it could be DNS-based, but if I put the name in to the Link client and just tell it to go there, I don't do this discovery. It's just going to process, it's just going to try to go there from a very basic perspective. Now, I come back to here, and I display my DNS, we will notice that I did an underscore SIP internal, no record found. So we did that SRV check. Then we come here for SIP internal as an A record, not found. SIP, not found. Underscore SIP TLS, not found. Everything's coming back saying, I don't Link Discover, not found. SIP external, not found. We didn't find anything. Right? It didn't work. The process failed because we simply didn't have a DNS solution for things to come up the way we want. Now, if we want to fix it, we have failures. We need to flush this so it'll do a query again and not assume that it's right because it's wrong. Then, let's see if I can do this. Then we can go back and we'll just do the Link Discover. We won't even do the SRV records at this point. Where's my mouse? There it is. Okay. And he is 70, I believe. Yes. Now, a lot of records within Link, as we know, not a lot. Most records within Link must be A records. And that especially has to do when we're doing it with a server name. Web services technically can be CNAME records because it's a web query. It's all we're doing. We're not adding a layer of security based off of them. However, in my experience, it's much easier to just tell the powers that need to know to simply make all A records. It's not worth the argument of which one's two, which one's not. It doesn't hurt anything. It can arguably be not best practice because you're not making CNAMEs and you're making A records for duplicate things. That's just the way it goes. So with the whole new world, and you just need to embrace it. Link. Okay, let's see, Link Discover Internal, and we're going to do 10.128.100.70. Okay, so now I have an answer, all right? When I query for Link Discover Internal, it's going to come back with something. Now, what that something is what we want to see. So at this point, we know it didn't work. We want to get a trace going on because it'll be fun. So again, we're doing Wireshark. I only have the one interface, so we'll just start tracing and let it go. Things are just going to be talkative because they are. And now Davey's going to try to go ahead and sign in. And when it does, the process works. As simple as just DNS was right. Now, when we come back to looking at Wireshark, we'll say, oh, that's awesome. But what actually happened? And the easiest way is to filter on where we're going, ideally, or a process perspective. So if we just want to search on DNS, we'll enter DNS and say, what DNS queries happened? And we can see the first thing we searched for was Link Discover Internal. And it came back with a response. Now, you'll also notice a query for link discovery went out just as quickly, just say, hey, is this one here too? Because let me know what's going on, and then I'll figure out which answers I want to use based off my results. But link does have, and plus VMs take a micro millisecond longer. So you may see additional queries that you actually are discarding and not using, because really all we're looking for at this point is link discover internal. And so once we get the actual response back, no such name, because link discover isn't in our internal. So link discover is, and we get the query back, the query response of that's 10.70, and then all of a sudden, we're talking to our box. Now, what and why did we know to talk to that box when we were only talking to a web service? That's where we tie into the fiddler to see what responses were coming back. And that's all based off the auto-discover process. So let's look at that. So again, fiddler, freeware, shareware, I don't know, it's one of those two. It allows you to interject a certificate, and that's really the key to what we're trying to do. So from a certificate perspective, for those who have not used it, it's simply going to your tools, maybe. Come on. And not. Did the internet drop? So this is all running in Phoenix. So if it doesn't work, Phoenix needs to be rebooted. That's not going to happen. So let's see if one of the other servers are still up. Aha! Uh-huh. Says I have IP. Well, this may not be as fun. I lost IP. Okay, so I am plugged in. The live demos just never work the way you expect them to work, because just one of those things. But that's okay. I'm sure it'll come back. And nope, their gateway shows down. We will go to plan B. We'll try to do this over AT&T Cellular. Let's see how good of a process we have in here. Always have a backup to the backup. Why our internet's down, I have no idea. But OK, here we go. Internet sharing. That's the backup phone, like the bat phone. So it should show up as the BC phone. Awesome. Says it connected. Yes. And see, troubleshooting 101, just when things don't work the way you want them to. OK. And we have a gateway. Let's try to go back to here. Refresh box, you can do it. OK. Any second now. And we're back. OK. So when we're looking at our thank you. So when we're looking at our tools, it's not a hard process to get this fiddler application working. In fact, it's quite easy, and almost to the point where you wish it went deeper, but you get what you get when you pay for what you get, right? So when we go to fiddler options, one of our options is HTTPS. If we click decrypt, it's going to pop up all these boxes that say, do you want to, in fact, install this root certificate, and you're going to trust it, and we're interjecting things, and we're taking over your life, and is that OK? You click OK 100 times, and then hit OK here. And now anything that comes through the process that we hear, we can decrypt. And then, OK, so as long as we show caption at the bottom, ideally, and by default, any HTTP traffic is what we're seeing, or HTTPS. The nice thing is that we're filtering out all the other stuff, and we're looking only at the web traffic that's going through here. So if I was to browse to somewhere, it would show me where I'm browsing. Link, of course, is going to be doing his own process and his process of link discover. So let's go ahead and sign out of here. Actually, let's exit. Let's make him force the whole process over. Make the computer work a little. We'll start that over. And then we will go ahead and log in again. And maybe. Oh, that's Microsoft. Wrong page. Alan, there you go. It's caption stuff, which is not necessarily what we wanted, but that's OK. OK, here we go. So we're going to go ahead and start link. And when we do, you'll notice how much traffic is generated. There's a lot of web traffic that link's going to be generating. It's all HTTPS traffic. We're generating where to go, who to look at, and then you'll notice Exchange traffic. And while we don't, in fact, I looked at going one step further with this demo and bringing us into Exchange and EWS and problems logging in there. It just wasn't time. But here again, we can see what are we querying and are we getting back results that we would expect. If all we're getting is 401s back or 400s or 501s, then we're not logging into anything. We're getting rejected every time we try to talk to something, and we need to investigate what that process is. So let's go ahead and stop this capture and start to look at what we actually did. When we started with Link and we started our process, we can see that we went ahead and did a query. And we did a query for Link Discover, and we did a query for Link Discover internal, right? When we did the queries, we wanted to find out what's going on and what's not going on. And in here, I can look at my XML version of what's going on. And I can see that initially it kicked back the servers I need to talk to. And that's where the process of Link Discover internal is telling us where things are going. It's telling us, hey, I've done Link Discover. Start here to get your auto-discover process. Once that happens, as we continue down, we'll see web tickets exchange because we need to actually get authentication. And we'll get down to authentication, but there's an authentication piece that's still happening here as well for us to be able to get to Link Discover. Now, one of the big advantages of that, and we'll get to that again in authentication, is that means if I can't authenticate here, it stops. I've yet to talk to any of my Link servers, right? Other than a web query happened on my behalf, but I'm not trying to log in. I'm not trying to get anywhere. If I fat finger something when I'm trying to log into from a user login perspective, I don't exist. I don't get past just doing a web query, and it says, denied. Access denied. You can't do that query. So this is authenticated queries only. SRV records are not authenticated, right? That's DNS. Anybody can figure out where it's going, but the risk level is obviously not anything high, but it is a response that they're going to be able to know without having to do a query. Link Discover is authenticated. We continue down the process, and then we get to finally to where we're doing auto discover, and again, this is where we're getting back all the results of all the potential things that we may need. And the reason everything's kicked back is AutoDiscover doesn't know what client you are, what you're doing. It doesn't have any idea what the process is. All it knows is that it was queried for our information regarding your link information, and voila. Now, again, to stress on the external, when we're looking and where we're trying to get, if we can't get to this process, if it doesn't resolve, in this case it's meetings, brightcomplabs.com. If I can't get there, then I can't get into mobility. It doesn't matter. If I can't resolve that internally, I can't get in. Now, internally, it more than likely will be an internal pointer to the reverse proxy, whatever it happens to be defined as a reverse proxy internally, so we can hairpin that back around to port 4443. But outside, it's just going to go directly to that meetings because that would be the record. But this is the case where we actually need our external web services name internally if we want to be able to get to our process for mobility correctly and log in and stay logged into the process. Same holds true for MCX. For those that don't know or want to forget, that's the 2010 process of mobility, right? That's not using web services, and that's completely a whole other session unto itself. But we do start with our internal discover. We start with our web scheduler. We get cert provisioning. We know where the web scheduler is on the outside, where it is on the inside. A lot of people don't realize, but with 2013, there is a web scheduler built in that you can actually go to. So if you really wanted to, you could go to your web page or your in this case, it happens to be the pool name, /scheduler. That old scheduler that was in the OCS days, it's all built in nice and neat and pretty in 2013 for those that want to use it. It has all of its limitations that it had back in OCS days, but it is just part of Link and in there. But this is the information that we're getting back from AutoDiscover. And from AutoDiscover, we then start our process of actually logging into the server. So the authentication, where we're going next, right? But at this point, if we are having problems here and we are not getting back the responses, if we're not getting back 200s and 300s, everything's being blocked at 401, we're having authentication issues just to get to discovery, then we have other problems. But from a moving forward perspective, this is where we want to get to. From here. So then this was all done via Link Discover, or Link Discover internal, technically. But the exact same thing can happen if, in fact, we do. And we'll all go ahead and clear this. Oh, actually, yeah, If we did it not with Link Discover, but with SRV records or with ANAMs, because we don't actually need. And as I recall back in the day, not that Link's been around or OCS or LCS that long, but back in the mid-2000s, that was one of our workarounds, was just to use the ANAM record of SIP, because we either didn't have the ability to do SRV records, or the team that supported us didn't want to do SRV records, and so it's just the way it worked. But when we come here, that is not actually closed. Now, actually, let's do this. DNS, things don't work, Link Discover. What do we think is going to happen? At this point, we have logged in before, if in fact Link Discover internal does not exist. Again, that's the only record that we made. Of course, all the other records that actually are internal A records. But from a discovery process, there are no other records. We didn't make the SIP. We didn't make any other information specifically pointing to the pool. All of this happened through discovery. When we come back to the client, nope, that's the server. There's the client. And we go ahead and run. Let's start our process. It will, dun, dun, dun. Work. Why? Because again, we've cached the information. We're not having to re-query that information. It's not there to get. There is no Link Discover, but we're not going to, on a relog, and we're not going to go do that whole query over again. And in fact, when we look, we didn't do anything. We didn't even query. There was no DNS call. We didn't check anything from a DNS perspective. All we did is go directly to the pool. We knew where to log in. It's also possible that we are no longer on that pool. That very well may be. Assuming we're valid, we're a real user in the link world, I would get a 301 redirect, and I would be pushed over to the other pool by name. And so again, Link Discover doesn't matter at this point, right? I'm just being redirected at that point. So as long as I've been in once, this works. This is really important, and why things either work or don't work when we're at remote sites and SBAs and things of that nature, and how we're able to do some of the disaster recovery and the HA things, because we already know where we're going. So unless there's a major change, we're good to go. And obviously, all has to be working. If in fact there is a change, well, then everything needs to be functioning. Otherwise, you won't get into anything because there's a change that's happening on the back end. But that's a change to the point where we can't get to what's going to be the resolution's name, right? So again, if we use something like SIP in our name, then if that pool were to go down, if it was just to blow up on ourselves, or somebody decided it would be an awesome idea to build a new pool and decommission the old without touching anything DNS, as long as DNS pointed to that new pool, either via IP or with same IP, or you updated DNS to point to that IP, your client's going to go to SIP, blah, blah. It's going to find it. It's completely different than where we talked to before, but it's still going to get there because we've already done that query once. And to kill it, if they've never logged in, then obviously nothing works, as we saw. If they have to have logged in once, that's the only reason this guy was able to get in as he is now. So now to just push this and stop that, we will go ahead and do it via SRV. And the whole process is different. And then when the process is different, what happens on the web process? Well, nothing different, which is good. So I don't want link. That's why I want the domain controller. So if I come back here and I don't do anything other than, and this time I'm going to make an A record for SIP. I just want him to exist because it's easier in my world. And I think it breaks my demos later if I don't, so I will make him. I do not have a Link Discover. I have no information there. And then I'm going to go ahead and make my SRV record. Now, I could stop just with that because, again, it will find SIP. It will do that query. In fact, why not? We'll do a query, and we'll only find the A record because the A record does exist. So back to the client. Okay. We will restart. Clear our cache, and off we go. So, Guy has no idea where he's going, or so we think. And in fact, he gets a response for SIP. He gets the IP address back. And he's in, just with a single A record. Because it's SIP. Well, one, it's in the certificate. If it wasn't in the certificate, this wouldn't work. Now, that's also why, when you're running through the wizard, it asks the question, do you have phones? For older phones that are Link phones, and we're talking about the Link phone edition, so this would be Tang J, as we read into that, it looked for SIP. And that's where he was going as what process he was looking for. So if you check that box, what he's actually doing is adding the name SIP to your certificate request. So not required by any means, and not required if you have any phones that are not there, but something I like to do, because again, my Link Discover is broken. It's not working like I think it should be working. My SRV records aren't there yet. I still got A just from a single A record pointing me in, and that was via SIP. So there are a lot of ways to get things in, and a lot of different ways that we need to be looking at things when we're troubleshooting. That's what makes Link so hard. It's awesome that it's robust. It'll do everything it can to log in and stay logged in and give you the quality that you're looking for. However, because of that, there's so many different avenues we need to look at when we're actually discovering what's going on. We're having to figure all that out. Now, and I close Fiddler because I don't know why. So let's open it up again and watch the auto discover process, or the Link discovery doesn't happen because we don't, yeah. Okay, so we will flush him. We will clear him out. And then, come on. Okay. We can obviously Exchange is going to do what it's going to do, because every time we log in, we do an EWS query. But as we're looking for our tickets and we're validating that we can get in, we have skipped over the process and we've just gone right and got our ticket. Now we're doing our response groups and things are going to move on their way, because we're not doing any of the auto discover process. Everything is relying on the fact that we know the SIP is by name, we're going to where we're going, and there's still going to be queries that happen. And if we're still getting blocked here when we go to do our queries to get our web ticket, for instance, that's not going to be good. If we can't get our web ticket, then assuming we're doing TLS DSK, then we're not going to be able to get in and authenticate. But again, we can see where we're pulling response groups, what's our information for our response groups that we're having. As we continue down, maybe not. We get the Exchange web service, and then Exchange is going to fill itself up forever in a decade, trying to get to things. I think he's up. Yeah, he's up. But, so that's that process. So, okay. Yay, so far it's so good. So the Link Web App Store. Now, I could have demoed this, but it probably would have failed, because it never seems to. This is a very hard app to troubleshoot. And rather than put my foot in my mouth, I just said, yeah, we'll just talk about it. And that way, you just know it works, because I said it worked, rather than try to show it. But it is a Link Discover only. So in the current process, while we did add SIP and all of a sudden your fat clients are getting in, if the reports came back saying, hey, all of our modern clients are unable to get into Link, however, all of our fat clients are into Link, that could be a big pointer. You know, our phones are in, everything else is in. We're having an auto discover, Link Discover internal problem. Something's not working correctly there. And the big point being that Link Discover happens, and once Link Discover happens, it then stops. If it doesn't find its answers, it's over. It does not do any SIP discovery via DNS, SRV, any of that, none of it, right? And then we off to our web queries like we would expect. So if we have an internal failure, and we'll look, there's what he queries for. Is Link Discover there? Nope. Or Link Discover internal? Nope. Link Discover? Nope. Fail. It just dies. There's no way to get beyond it. And again, this is a 2010 thing that was introduced with mobility. And so in theory, if you were a 2010 shop or a brand new 2013, you'd have both these records. There's no reason not to. Short of, if you were 2010 and you're doing a CU, that means you had to get new certificates. And that's never necessarily fun. But yeah. So there's our error. That way. Can't sign in because the server couldn't be reached. Couldn't be reached because it couldn't find anything to go to. Very annoying. I can say I have seen environments where I have logged in to one domain before and then tried to change the user to log in, and it always queried the other domain to get to that location, the other Link Discover, and that always failed. And that's a great question as to why. And I know part of the product group worked on it for a very long time because it was part of their servers internally we were doing it. I have no idea. It's a beast unto itself. Uninstall the app, reinstall the app from the store is typically the best fix if it's just not acting like the way you'd want. But you would never know it wasn't doing what it was supposed to do if you weren't doing something like a Wireshark trace, because there really is no way to see any of this. There's no way to get your information. Fiddler does have the ability to do Windows 8 apps. You tell it which Windows 8 apps you want to watch, and you kind of click the box and off it goes. And that typically works. But the Windows 8 Metro interface is the Windows 8 Metro interface. So it does what it wants to do. It protects itself well how it wants to protect itself, and sometimes you don't get what you would expect. So I point being, when we're working with the modern client, we definitely want to trust but validate over and over and over on multiple machines. Just because one doesn't work doesn't mean they're all not going to work. All right? When it works, like you would expect to work, we get the link discover internal, whatever happens to be the one that we have that it hits, off it gets its answer, and then it goes. Now again, if in fact it hits link discover internal and it doesn't trust the certificate because it's an internal and the box you're on is external, it should then query for link discover, and go that way. Because that, in theory, will always be a public certificate because that's what the name and reverse proxy and how you're pointing things. We have seen multiple installs where individuals have, what's the best way to say this? They've decided that they don't want to follow Microsoft's recommendations, because we'll leave it at that. And so it is possible to do, from an outside access perspective, a simple NAT on the firewall for 443 and 80 to 8080. So when it comes in, it goes right to your pool and it's NATed, it's a PAT, it's a port address translation. And technically that works. And if you're not concerned about security, and the argument being if Outlook web app is directly accessed from the outside, directly inside, then you're just as secure or not secure as OWA. So what's the issue? The issue is that works externally, that will never work internally because we can't get to 4443 unless we're hitting something to redirect us. And assuming that you have a enterprise or at least a near enterprise quality firewall, it's not going to allow you to come from the inside, hairpin outside, and come right back in. That's what the reverse proxy is for. He's designed to get the traffic from an internal interface and then redirect it. That's all it's doing. Fancily, it's maybe also be doing some deep level packet inspection and checking out where you're going. But really, it's from A to B, redirecting your ports. So here, similar to the way that we cache, and this is why there is no cache folder to delete on the mobile client that gets everything, because there are folders, but anyway. So when you're doing the modern client and you log in, when he caches where to go, now he's stuck there. And again, the way to change that is uninstall, reinstall the mobile client, and that may work. Or format and start over, that works too. But it's just one of those things. Deleting the user profiles is the fix. That's never a nice thing for people that actually have a profile that they want their things to be the way that they are. But that is how we look internal, and it's very similar to the FAT client. It is that we're going to do the query. Once we have the query, we know where to go. Big difference is we don't have all of that stepping after or before of the SIP and the DNS communications. Okay. So that's, now we know where to go, right? So woohoo! So the all of that process was link figuring out. Awesome. I now know which server to log into. I know where my home is. I know where my edge servers are. I know how to get to where I need to get. So now, let's log in. That's the theory. Anyway, that's when authentication comes in. So basic SIP registration, basic authentication happens. Now, by default in Link 2013, we are going to be using TLS DSK. So that's certificate, client certificate-based authentication, right? So when I log in, my web services are going to kick off a self-signed cert from the link pool. This has nothing to do with our CA, our internal CA, our external CA, nothing to do with anything. It happens to be a certificate that the link server generates and kicks back to you as a client and you install in your local machine. And if you've logged in and you do, well, I'm all over installing places and companies. It's funny to sometimes go back to my local store, it's your personal local store, and see all the certificates from all the companies I've tested and logged in on my box before. It's like, oh, yeah. And they add up. You have to purge them out. They will expire. By default, they are 6-month certificates, which can add some interesting complexities in and of themselves. But that aside, the basic process of any login when we talk about Link is our first 401. Most people when they first look at Link, go, ah, nothing's working. Look at all these 401s. We are failing. Everything's awful. The world's coming to an end. And that's not the case. Regardless of the authentication, whether it be IntelM, whether it be TLS DSK, it doesn't matter. Our first communication with the Link server will always be rejected. That's how we work. We're closed door, and we say, you come in and say, I'd like to talk. And you say, go away. But if you do want to talk, I talk this, this, and this method. And that's what that first 401, you know, deny is. Fail. I'm not going to talk to you. But if you want to talk to me, then you have I support these methods. And off they go with those methods. So that, looking at our SIP tree, which correlates to the first failure up here, is our first unauthorized. Then, because by default we're doing DSK certificate, TLS DSK, there's a handshake that happens. I say, okay, so you'll do TLS, here I am, and he goes, that's nice, go away. And then he says, here I am, and you say, that's nice, go away. And this is, you know, it's a hand on top of hand process where it's deciding who wins this login. It takes three times for finally everybody to agree, okay, I guess you are who you say you are, and I trust you're who you say you are, and then voila, we get a 200, okay. But every time we're doing these login processes, you will see hundreds of 401 authorized in a normal environment in spans, especially in the morning, because people are logging on and we're rejecting you, letting you in. And it sounds backwards. It sounds like a process that is not very efficient, but in effect, it allows us to ensure that the sign-in process we're looking for is what is authenticated and that it is secure. So there, keep in mind, no client to server, no link client, Microsoft link client to Microsoft link server communication is unencrypted. It's secure, encrypted end to end. Once we go outside the link world, we potentially could be going to somewhere like an AOL or a PIC Federation where things aren't. Internal communications of internal apps, maybe they're not. Maybe our voice is going over a SIP trunk that's not. But that's outside the purview of Microsoft. We are saying anything that is a Microsoft server or a Microsoft-created client for Link is going to be encrypted end to end. And yes, that includes mobility, right? So you're talking on your cell phone, voice over IP, that's all encrypted. It's also why some of the data charges are as high as they are, because we're adding a lot of padding to these things as we're encrypting all of our communication. So it's secure end to end, and that's where some of this extra handshaking requirements come into play. So when we're looking, and this is Snooper, hopefully everybody recognizes that, and a simple SIP trace that happens on the server. And when we come into it, we're simply looking at what works, what doesn't work from a logging in perspective. Is a user logging in, and does he get in? Very simple, right? Now, when we're looking at the server and client communications, what are some of the problems that can happen once we get the discovery process done? Well, invalid SIP URIs, fat-fingering your user can happen. It happens more often than not to myself because I'm not part of when I'm working on other people's environments, my computer's not part of their domain. So it's not auto-filled in for me, right? I just launch Link and then I come. So it isn't necessarily a problem for a lot of people that are just on the enterprise, but if you are manually entering it, or you're using the web client, or you're using the mobile client, or the modern client, then you very well, and well, mobile too, very easy to fat finger stuff, especially on the mobile client. It's also possible the user's not provisioned, and if they don't actually have Link, if they're not in the system, they will get through the Link Discover process. Yep, nope, right? Because yes, you're authenticated, yes, you have AD credentials, but no, you don't exist in the environment. So I can't give you back any auto-discover because I don't know where you're at because you're not. You don't exist. So that's a connection issue. Password problems and figuring out, is it just an issue with a password? So a lot of times, we as the IT pro side of support are looking at users complaining, I can't get in. Well, this is where we're looking to kind of peruse the logs and evaluate the logs and be able to tell what is the actual problem that's causing these people to fail their login. And it's actually fairly clear, and we'll see that in a couple of slides to go. So it's also possible that invalid logins and passwords is someone just trying to do a brute force attack. That's possible. Not likely that it gets to the inside at that level, because the edge server should be kind of sort of preventing it. And there are third-party tools that we can add on to the edge server to help prevent those even further. But yes, and then invalid certificates. So if you are, which we would expect and recommend and hope, that you're using an internal private CA for this rollout, that if you are having and dealing with users that are not domain joined and you have an enterprise CA, they're not going to trust you by native. They're going to have to give them your root and or intermediate certs in order to log in the link. And in fact, one of the most common, and we don't get into it much here from a troubleshooting perspective, but troubleshooting 101, look at the event logs. The client event logs will say explicitly, I don't have a certificate. I can't get in. I don't trust you, right? That'll happen. Now, it's not always, from an administrative perspective, easy to get to the client side to see their logs, and so thus, we're going to show from a server side what we can do. But in reality, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the server logs, the client logs, all under the application on the client, all under the client captured logs, which we'll look at slightly, as well as on the server, the link logs on the server itself. And then what are we going to use? CLS Logger, our favorite logging utility when we want to talk to all a bunch of servers in a pool or multiple pools. OCS Logger, if it's a single server simple environment. and then Snooper to kind of help us evaluate that. We can look at those various things. So a bad SIP URI. When the link discover is deployed in this environment and he goes to log in, you may get this, you didn't get signed in, right? It may be your sign address, maybe your credentials, I don't know. I just know you can't get in, so try again. The important part is, if you're doing a SIP trace on the server and a user goes to log in, that you'll never see SIP traffic hit the server. It'll never reach there, because they didn't get a response back with Link Discover deployed. Link Discover is actually what stopped the login process, not the failure to authenticate or log in on the server. Much different than in the 2010 in the SRV. SRV, we'd always get there. And then you could capture information on the server and you'd see, it's being blocked or denied. When we're doing a capture with bad SIP, so the URI, in this environment, you're going to get something similar, but now we have DNS. But if we look, there is a user that is isn't enabled for SIP, and that's Big Bird. He wasn't enabled. So while his account exists, he was able to authenticate auto-discover. So now he gets past the auto-discover process and tries to log into Link. Link says, you don't actually have a Link account, so you can't come in. Or you type, but that potentially be it too, but probably not unless you had separate login credentials that you were pushing. But the key here is to look, when you're looking at your reason, there will 97.5% of the time be a error code, a reason code listed that is normal, human readable text within our SIP traces. That's nice, right? It actually tells us, And if we look at the trace, we know the user's login, what they're logging into. Are they typing it right? Is that right? Is everything blah, blah, blah? But we can go and take it from that perspective. So SRV's deployed. They've gotten to the server. And once we get to the server, the user doesn't exist, so nothing happens. And that's an interesting one to try to troubleshoot if Link Discover is not there, because again, we don't actually ever see it get to the server. So it's back to the client. We need to go to the client side and see what's going on, because I don't know. You're not reaching me as on the server to let me know what's going on. Wrong box. There we go. Okay. So here we have two examples. One is, yes, your AD credentials are good, but you're trying to access a Link account that does not exist that you have rights to, right? And then the second one is you actually don't have good credentials. So when we're looking up here, we will see a 403 forbidden. That's our big 403 forbidden. And credentials provided are not authorized. And we can see the person trying to log in here, they're trying to get to the Lone Ranger's account, right? We're trying to go to lr@brightcomplabs.com. However, the credentials being passed, you can see, are brightcomplabs/dc, different user. So a different user is trying to get into a different account that doesn't have rights. And again, it actually tells you right in the list, this is the problem. Here's the user trying to log in. This is where they're trying to go. Not going to happen. Conversely, on the bottom, we have unauthorized 401s, and we'll see four of them, and then we don't get our 200. If we don't get our RK after we have a bunch of unauthorized, there is no way for that user to get in because he's passing bad AD credentials. Now, if he had logged in before and he had a certificate, potentially he would get by that issue because we bypass AD, which is a whole other process. But with TLS DSK, once we have a certificate, it is very possible on the outside of the network to log into Link, even if our AD count is disabled or expired or password. It doesn't matter because we're not using your AD account at that point. All we're doing is, because we already know who you are, We're not doing the link discover process, so I don't need to authenticate at the link discover level. I go directly to the server, I pass my certificate that I already have, which is valid, and into link I get. I mean, I get into Exchange, I'm gonna have all kinds of weird pop-ups because Exchange is gonna say your account's disabled and I can't get in. So you're gonna have other problems, but it's highly important to know that it is possible to log into link with a disabled Active Directory account, right? We can get there because of the certificate. Now, that sounds bad, and it very well may be. The important part is, if we want to remove someone's ability to log into link, they need to be deprovisioned from link. Right? It's not just deprovisioning from Active Directory. You have to be an AD for the first time to log in, but once you get in, we got this 6-month span window by default. Now, you can also shorten that time frame, how often those certificates expire. There is a cost to expiring certificates on the server because we're issuing them more often, which puts up a greater load, and so it depends on what you want and your process, but really it's an operational thing. We need to make sure that when we're disabling a user from Active Directory, that they're disabled in link manually. Otherwise, they'll get in even with bad AD creds. And then our untrusted certificate. Now, on the FAT client, link discover is going to happen, and like it should, it's going to say, I don't trust your internal box. That's awesome. Link discover internal. We're getting all those 401s back. Auto discover is 401ing. Web tickets are 401ing. Doesn't matter. Things aren't working. But our auto discover ends up running correctly at the bottom. So that's our very last auto discover. However, now we know where to go as a FAT client. We go to log into the server. We need TLS to make that happen. And if we don't trust the certificate, then just like the server says, the TLS connection was closed. So whenever you're doing a search on link and looking for the errors that happen to be on Snooper, if we ever see this TLS connection was closed before, blah, 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 we have a certificate problem. Something's not trusting our certificate, whether it be ourselves, our chain's incorrect, we don't have the full chain on the boxes, so nobody can trust our certificate, or the certificate being used as a private cert and it's somebody down the outside that doesn't have our private root, or there's some other certificate-based problem, that's our certificate issue. So with that, we're going to try to quickly get into a demo on the process and where we would see this. And the idea of what this will be is more of a wrong user information and how we would capture stuff and what we're looking at. So it's not, this is hopefully something that's been done a lot by you guys. And again, because I'm a single server, single environment, I don't need to use CLS logger. If you know the front end and the box you're talking to, which you can get by git-cs user pool user's name, that'll tell you what server they're actually be authenticating to. You could potentially just run OCS logger only on that box. Ideally, you're using CLS logger, which is getting better and more reliable. So anyway, we'll stop there. So the SIP stack is all we're going to be looking for. When we're dealing with phones and we're dealing with logins and things of that nature, the most common things we're ever searching are SIP stack, S4, which is SIP for voice, basically, and mediation, right? Those things all add up to what we are looking for in 99% of our SIP trace problems. SIP stack is SIP, and it's SIP regardless of who we're talking to. And so the nice thing is if we just select SIP and all, we're going to get the communications, the backend flow, and from a login process, that's exactly what we're looking for. We're looking for just, can you get into my box, and if you get in, what's happening or not happening. So we can start this log and go happy-go-lucky. And then if we want to look at, let's see, if we do, let's get rid of link discover. Because if, well, actually, we'll show. Actually, even better. If I have link discover, which I do, and, or I don't, but I will. If I have link discover internal on this box, and I use them interchangeably, obviously link discover internal is internal. Link discover without the internal is external, but can be internal as well. And sometimes you'd want it to be if you don't trust your certificate for link discover internal, because then we'll fail to discover to go look for it. So internal, then discover without the internal, but only if we can't get to the internal, right? Okay. So link discover internal. Okay. 10.1.
That's totally accurate.
Of course.
You just said that.
I do strive to never say things that are not accurate, but yeah. Okay. So now we have a link discover internal record. Make sure he doesn't have a cache saying he doesn't. We'll just clear him out just for sanity check. Obviously, we could wait on a lot of stuff. I don't have time to wait. So We come back to here. We will then decide that while, yeah, we know that the system is working because we are, in fact, logged in as Davey, we're going to try to log in as someone else on this box. So we want to be, we'll be the Lone Ranger. It's LR, I think. Can't tell. Okay, and we're going to go ahead and sign in. Now it's going to ask for a password, right? Now at this point, if I come ahead and type a bad password and go ahead and sign in, I fail. Now I'm signing in from a failure because I don't have rights to get there. Now important is the fact that if we come back to the server side, because somebody's saying they can't get in, you said, okay, let me start a trace, see what's going on, and we'll help you out, blah, blah, blah. We come here and stop this log. They failed, and we go to analyze it eventually. We won't have record of that because they didn't get there because we're using Link Discovery in order to do this tracing. So as things populate and pull themselves in, we will look for DC's here, DC's here, DC here, no Lone Ranger. Nobody's logging in. It's not happening. We're not seeing. We're seeing subscribes and things going of that nature. But we're not getting where he's actually trying to authenticate and log in. Because again, the web services are what's stopping this process. Our actual attempts to do the auto discover process via Link Discover fails because our credentials are wrong, and that's an authenticated login. So we actually are stopping attacks, per se, or failures, which is great, really hard to troubleshoot then because now we don't know where these attacks happen. However, we can go to our wonderful logs that are on the local box, and those are viewable on Snooper or in a text pad. And a lot of times Snooper hides stuff, so sometimes the actual text pad is what we want to look to. But we can open them up and see login failures physically on the client because obviously the client knows what's going on that he didn't get there. The client logs here work fairly well and are fairly robust. There are other client logs that are not so robust that won't help us much. The ones that come to mind are the Windows Phone edition, the CLE logs. They're useless. You can send them to PSS because they have their decryptor ring that can actually read the things, and then they'll come back. Theirs are useless. So it's just one of those logs you can capture to make you feel good, but they don't actually do anything for you. And then the other ones being mobile logs. Now, the iOS logs are the exception, ironically, to the rule, that they log much cleaner, much nicer, more verbose, and it's easy to understand, which is what we'll show in our next here second, versus the others, the worst being Windows Phone, sadly enough, that the logs are just useless. So, yeah. Okay. Moving on. The mobile client. So far we've looked at our authentication, and then after authentication, or our discovery, then we had authentication happen. Within discovery, we have slight authentication because we have to authenticate to the web services, but it's not the SIP authentication that happens. So then we look into, and in this example, the Apple iPad, because, again, it's much easier to do than any other of the devices. So it's going to only do Link Discover because it's mobile, and mobile doesn't do the SRV lookup, so the mobile app, for 2013. We're going to do the exact same process, and a lot of these are just duplicates. Hey, that's exactly what the previous slide said for the modern client. You're right. It's exactly the same login process, the difference being how we actually view these logs. So rather than try to bring up an iPad and fail and then show everybody, we just have an unfortunate capture to try to show you what you're looking for when you're doing this process. And it's really important because for mobility, a lot of stuff good could happen, and then we have our failure. It's also important to know that we is explicitly defined what the error is. It's just in a super secret code. So you'll become familiar with the codes. There's a couple that I show that are obvious codes that we'll go for. But in this example, the process is starting. And you'll notice we do a get, right? We're doing an HTTPS get for Link Discover. And then we get some responses back. And in fact, some of those responses are the Microsoft Server FQDN is up there as well. So great. The iPad now has been able to get Link Discover to work. We know where we're going. And then we're going to get our web ticket. Very similar to what we're looking at and our process when we were looking at the Fiddler of how things were being captured, where we'd start with our Link Discover and auto-discover process, and then we're getting a web ticket, and then we auto-discover the auto-discover process, and go from there. So the client login process is the same. It's just a matter of figuring out how it works. There really are just two. There's the auto-discover process, and there's the SRV process. Once we get that back, then we're going to go to AutoDiscover. So we have our web ticket. We can now log in correctly, and we can get to this authenticated site. And when we do, we're going to get back information from on AutoDiscover. And there will be all the XML information that comes back from him. And there it is. So very similar to the client, the remembering the key that we're only, that's great from the Microsoft Link mobile clients, the only thing we care about is UCWA and external UCWA. We don't care about the internal UCWA. We don't care about MCX because this is the 2013 client. We don't care about your SIP servers. We don't care about the Edge. We don't care about anything. What we care about is UCWA and the app. And when we do our next query, we see that. We're now going to the external name of the server. So that was in our HTTPS, UCWA external, that line. So we're like, OK, let's go to that line. That's where it's telling me to go. And then bang, failure. So everything's worked up to this point. But the problem we have now is a connection error. And that is meetings doesn't exist. It didn't resolve. So you will always be these E number dash number dash number. Those are what you're searching for in your mobile logs. They do exist in all of the mobile client logs. They're just harder to read in anything but the iOS logs. So if we're looking at an iOS log and we know we're looking for an E error, and typically we can search on error and E something, print E, and you're going to find what you're looking for. And in this case, again, it's connection error. He's going through the process. You know where he's trying to get to, and it's getting an error, error on domain. So when we're looking here, domain network failed. Error. We can't find that name, so we can't go to where we want to go. So it was as simple as it. Well, simple. That's what it was. It's also possible that while you are able to resolve the name, you can't get there, which is what a network access failure error is. It actually timed out. So you said to go to meetings. You gave me the IP of where I'm going. I tried to get there, and it didn't work. So I'm going to kick back E25 in this case, which is a connection timeout error. It's also possible that the services are hung. There's other problems. Other people would be having issues if this was, in fact, the case internally as well as externally. But that's where we'd want to look there. Yeah. And that is what, in general, we're looking for. So really, again, we start with Link Discover. We go to the web ticket request. We get the auto discover. We're looking for all of those, making sure that process is working like we would expect. And then finally, we're going to end up at trying to get to that UCWA location that is defined in auto discover. If we don't get the auto discover process back, well, then we have a problem prior to that. It could be, and then we'll have errors of authentication in the logs. We'll have all kinds of problems from that perspective, just like we would on the FAT clients. It's just replicated in the mobile clients. So it really is not that difficult, and it is no different from a login process perspective. We're going to the meeting site, so we're going somewhere different. We're going to UCWA, but we are not actually locked in. Right? It's different. So with that, we're to actually the questions phase, and we have 2 minutes, 17 seconds left. So, any questions? Yes. Mm-hmm.
You can get like pop-ups for SELM credentials.
Yes. Potentially. So that is an exchange problem. Problem is really a harsh word because it's no different than PIN authentication and exchange. The exchange doesn't trust the communication. So with the OAuth model, in theory, the server to server is there, could have rolled to the client potentially. But yes. It's not a problem if you're on domain and you're just logging in. We get who your AD user is. We know who you are from an Active Directory, and everything just kind of flows, and it all is happy-go-lucky. But if you're outside, there's no way for Link. Link's going to assume your SIP URI is your actual UPN. If it's not, you're going to get the pop-up to log in with your domain and user or UPN. Once that's in, it's then going to try to take the initial credential and get into exchange with it to your EWS query. That potentially is going to fail. It's a whole separate system. So will that ever come together? Right now it's an exchange thing that would have to be fixed, more so than a Link thing. From a futures perspective, I know the idea is to get it as clean as possible, but that's all. Yeah. Ooh. Okay. Yes.
How important do you think it is to set up for a
server? It depends. So important versus required. It's definitely not required. It's important if it's an internal audit issue. My argument would be that It's not from an internal perspective. It's how well do you trust your Active Directory? How well do you trust your internal network? Externally, Kerberos isn't going to work. We're in TLM at that perspective anyway. So if you have it, if you allow external, when you allow NTLM, then why is it forced Kerberos internally? You actually trust your users less? Huh. So it depends. But if in fact it's a requirement based off internal security policies, well, then it's important. Because that, otherwise, it's not getting in. So, yeah. Yes? It doesn't do all of everything, so it deletes most of the information, but not all of the information. So it's going to delete your saved credentials. It's going to delete information regarding that the user was there, so it'll auto-fill in the information when you first log in. What you don't have is a complete clear. The best way to actually wipe things out, if you're troubleshooting and you're trying to get the information, is just to delete it. So, ooh, I'm flashing. That means I'm over. Any other questions? Yes. Well, and that's where the latest versions of the mobile clients have tried to work towards, exactly because of BYOD. The question being, how do we support it? And that is, you can either push your certificates out. The current version of the Windows mobile phone does not ignore the failure on Link Discover internal, and it stops. Great. The previous revision did. The iOS still does. And Android just gives you a pop-up. You say ignoring. You keep going. So. Depending on your internal policies, it's not uncommon that we will see an email go out that has all of the internal certificates put on. There's advantages to having your internal root on your devices. When you're BYOD, it's hard to have some sort of MDM or mobile device management solution in place because you're not really owning it. But if you're in exchange, you typically are owning it to some extent. I mean, it's a hard area to walk. I would say most deployments will simply put up a website with instructions per type of device. Here's the certificate root and how you install it, and then go from there. The cleanest way to make things work always internally on all devices is to have the root cert trusted on the device, which means if you did an internal, the best way to do that is to have your internal CA root certificate on those mobile devices. Okay, one more. Functionality is what's the difference between the two. The login, the access process, it's all the same. But no, basic is the same thing. So, functionally, conferencing is diminished. Enterprise voice is diminished in the basic client. But beyond that, that's it. So we're going to officially wrap up. I'm going to remind everybody that there's stuff to be. I'll be at the pavilions later today. If there's questions, more information that you're looking at, don't forget the attendee party tonight. This is a really quick wrap-up. And that starts at 6:30 tonight. We want to do that. And hands-on labs, they're downstairs. That's great. Awesome. And then use my link to go find out stuff and information. And there is Birds of a Feather if you want to go look at those and talk to things. The big thing is don't forget to fill out your evals. They're important not only for you because you can win stuff. They're important for us because we know how to make things better for the next conference. And so without that feedback, we just don't have that information. And then I don't get thanked, and I don't like that. So if you can go ahead and fill those out, that would be awesome. Thank you.